Dr. Gary Namy, it is a pleasure and a privilege to speak with you. For those who don't know, and everyone should be aware, you are the leading expert, in my view and most people's view, the leading expert in this country in the study of workplace bullying and incivility. And you and your wife, Ruth, have been advocating for change for 27 years. Dr. Gary, as he is affectionately known by many of us, was the first expert I ever spoke to about this issue. I didn't know there were such people, and he's inspired me to add my voice in fighting the epidemic of psychological harassment in the office. Dr. Gary, thank you so much for taking part in this conversation titled Navigating Workplace Bullying, Finding Resilience and Feeling Joy, Even in Crisis. Dr. Gary, great to be with you, and thank you.
Glad to be here, Andy, and it's just this summit is quite a project, laudable project. I congratulate you.
Well, thank you. I'm only trying to add to the amazing work that you and your wife have been doing. So for background, and again, this is a big moment for me talking to you, and thank you for taking part because you have changed my life. That's as simple as I can describe it. So when I first called you after experiencing some 25 years of incivility in television production in New York, you said hello. I introduced myself very quickly, didn't tell you much about me at all, only that I was looking into this issue and I'd been bullied. At least I thought I had. I wasn't even sure. You said hello and then quickly asked me, and I think I'm quoting you, I think you said something to the effect of, okay, before you tell me much about yourself, I bet you're hardworking. I bet you're loyal, devoted, popular among staff, and a team player. And I was astonished. I was shocked. And it was as if I had already described myself to you exactly. And I do believe I'm all those things. And I think most of the people that I've worked with and for would say that. And then you said something, Andy, you have all the characteristics of a bully target. And it was like a watershed moment for me. You knew me. You knew things about me. So how did you know that about me? And that was the beginning of my, I hesitate to say journey, but of my interest in learning more about what I'd been through and trying to help others who have been through similar circumstances. So how did you know without me even telling you?
Well, a couple things about that. That feeling you had of relief is that came with the knowledge that you weren't alone. So I simply stated that. And of course, our national surveys show there are millions of people like you who've gone through it. The other thing is we, Dr. Ruth and I, spent years on the phones in the very beginning. We threw up a toll-free line and let it be known for people, if you're bullied, give us a call. Wow, that was something else. I remember Oprah put us on her Angels Network, and they came in droves, the callers came. So what we did in hearing over 12,000 targets before we stopped counting, we thought we'd heard it all. Now, it's a different type of research than doing the national surveys or even the online empirical quantitative surveys, but it's the richest kind of research because you get the nuance of these stories. And I'm embarrassed that I did that to you because in the beginning years, Ruth, who was the clinical psychologist who taught me everything about this phenomenon from the inside out. After all, it was her personal experience in a psychiatry clinic that led us to start this work. I mean, we didn't go looking around. We were happy. I was doing happy work with businesses. I was on the ocean all the time facilitating retreats and life was good and I was a professor. Yep. But into our life unexpectedly and without invitation came the bullying. Sheila was the
And what happened? What just briefly, what happened to Dr. Ruth that got you inspired for the two of you to do this work?
Well, it just became a fait accompli. She was working in a large healthcare system and changed clinics voluntarily because she wanted to get away from doing just drug counseling and dealing with druggies, people with addictions, and get back to family. and doing family therapy. And so she moved to a different clinic, and she had had several years in that system and had a good reputation, was happy and safe and everything. She changed clinics, fell under the thumb of the supervisor named Sheila, and life fell apart for her, though she didn't tell me. She kept it a secret for 4 months. Yeah. Every day, not every day, but I'm sure in the beginning when she first transferred, I'd say, how's the new place going? And she'd say, fine. And yeah. Then maybe I did it once a week down to once a month. And I thought everything had settled in. Boy, I was duped, because yeah. Targets out of the shame had no intention of revealing the depths of the despair that she had fallen into and the rest. Till finally it was holiday time, Christmas time. And she just broke down and talked about what had happened. Sheila had got some feedback from some of the patients. I mean, those are the customers of clinicians.
Yeah.
They loved Ruth. They followed her to her new clinic. They drove 50 miles just to be in Ruth's presence because of her observable skill and her kindness and her compassion. Sheila had none of that. Sheila was a frustrated clinical psychologist who wanted to be a business consultant. She was envious of Ruth's clinical skill. And so the whole 4 month period was one of escalating psychological violence against Ruth and undermining Ruth. But see, I didn't know any of that. I was so glibly stupid, because that's just how, I mean, that's what Ruth wanted to protect me from.
Yeah.
When she revealed it, I throw on my Superman costume and, I mean, you know, the cape is one thing. It's just wonderful. But the tights, not fun to get into.
Okay.
And I squeezed into them and I'm going to defend my wife, right?
Yeah.
And
yeah.
We took on this monster HMO in California, the biggest corporation, healthcare corporation in California. And we trotted out and we said, now what are we going to call this? This is obviously harassment. Wrong. It was not harassment, because HR refused to label it as harassment and characterize it as such. That's the big lesson we learned, but an expensive one, because we hired and had to fire a lawyer before we learned there's absolutely no law against this in America, especially when it's same gender, same race. But we thought it met the definition of harassment. And it does. It was meddling. It was interfering. It was sabotage. It was cruelty. It was demeaning. It was dehumanization. But you know what? None of that matters if you're not a member of a protected status group in the United States. So we learned all the limits of the law. Yes, was protected status member, but so was Sheila. So was she. When you get the two protected statuses, they kind of, you know,
cancel each other out, kind of.
Cancel, like, exactly.
Yeah.
So that immediately set our course to maybe we're going to have to work toward a law. But that didn't hit us right away. What hit us right away is, what are we going to do to get Ruth out of there and all that? Well, long story short, we engineered a severance and she got out without a lawsuit. And I trotted off to Europe on a really high-paying contract. I was delighted. And we forgot about it for about 6 months, but it was nagging. What has Ruth just been put through? And now her career is untracked. And she needed to go to grad school later in life. And it was really irky and made us mad. So when that contract ran out, I said, let's do something about this. What is this thing? This strange thing that's status blind harassment, if you will, a sort of a legal term. It doesn't require you be a member of a protected group. And lo and behold, the Brits had called it workplace bullying. Back up, prior to Andrea Adams in Britain calling it workplace bullying, it was mobbing in Scandinavia, led by a German researcher and a clinician again. So it always had clinical roots, because from the very beginning, this mobbing bullying had traumatization as one of its consequential outcomes for people.
Yep.
And that's what happened to Ruth. She had PTSD. Her I mean, she was under psychiatric care for what this had done to untrack her and destabilize her. It affects what our friend Pam Anderson's not a friend. Pam Lutkin-Sandvik wrote about the ontological threat to one's sense of meaning, your core definition of who you are. And that's what had grabbed Ruth so hard.
Well,
so we said, and sort of like a Mickey Rooney, Judy Garland way, giving away my speech there. Hey, let's have a parade. That in the movie, but for us, it's let's join the Americans who are leading this movement, the bullying movement in the U.S. No one, crickets. There was
right.
no.
There wasn't anyone before you.
And Ruth and I looked at each other and we said, "I think it has to be us." And she says, "Does it?" And I said, "Oh yes." And then that set our course for this second half of my life. I had a prior life as academic and a professor and all, and doing consulting. But this is what's going to take us to our grave. Hopefully, slower than fast, quickly.
Well, and so the Workplace Bullying Institute was born.
It was born. It was called something else then, but I named it. And of course, Ruth is the one who names everything. And she said, the morning after I named it the Campaign Against Workplace Bullying, she said, why? So as we picked up students and volunteers and then staff in subsequent years, it became Workplace Bullying Institute.
Well, and I, you know, like Ruth, I kept my bullying experience to myself. I felt alone, which you addressed right away. And it was when you told me that there were millions of us and that I didn't ask for it. I remember this conversation so well. Just 25 years of pain and frustration and self-blame. And to your point, it just, you lose your integrity, you lose your self-esteem. And obviously the daily things of you need the job because you need the money and all these things, it just overtakes you. So I share the feelings that Dr. Ruth felt and so many of us do. I had a great home life. I wasn't married the entire time I was bullied, but much of the time I was, but my wife would listen, but it didn't change anything. I had to go back to work. So you've dealt with so many people in that circumstance over the years. Let me ask this of you.
Wait, before you go there, I told you
that's please.
A long story to say.
Yeah.
I'm embarrassed that I did what I did to you, what I used to do in the early days of taking the calls. I would play some version of name that symptom and I can tag it. And I'd hear two factoids and I'd say, now I bet your supervisor came in the next day and said, and they said, oh my God, it's like you're in my cubicle with me.
Yeah.
From those thousands of calls, the pattern and practice emerged. It is so stinking predictable. It's as if these perpetrators have all read the same playbook.
Yeah.
And the closest book to that, by the way, that would describe it is called What Would Machiavelli Do? But long story short, there is no playbook, but the pattern is there. And I used to be snarky on calls and say, I would listen and then I would guess. And Ruth came and basically, because we were both taking calls in the same room on different lines, when she was free, she'd come over and beat me about the hands and face and say, listen, dummy, shut up and listen. Don't play guessing games. So I feel bad that I did that all these years later to you.
No, it was exactly.
Well, I should have learned. I should have remembered, but I don't take the calls anymore. I'm years away from talking directly to targets, except to film them and put them up at the website. But truth be told, I'm sorry for that, but I'm glad it had a good outcome for you.
Oh, my God. It changed my life. And so let me ask this. You've been doing this for 27 years thereabouts. Has the form of bullying changed over the years? I felt like my bullies, they seemed to find me in television. And part of it was I figured I've asked for it in a certain way. I'm in television. I'm in New York. Big media companies. You know, and now
wrong conclusion, wrong path to There, Andy. Oh, my. There's no way you invited it. Was there ever a work day where you awoke and said, today I need a good dose of humiliation. I'm going to let that show host or those other writers take me down and do that, as you've described in your book?
No.
And the other mistake that people make looking from the outside is say, oh, this is a characteristic of show business, or it's industry specific. Technically, it's more common in education and healthcare, but it's everywhere. It's the worst kind of hypocritical finding for me is, why in the world would abuse be prevalent in an organization whose entire mission is committed to stopping abuse, as in domestic violence shelters?
Yes.
And yet it's there. It's everywhere.
It's in nonprofit.
Have the tactics changed? No. They're all some sort of manifestation of a small person's personal agenda being projected onto someone they want to dominate because they've got no control over their own lives. Now, in a one-on-one situation, or if they enjoy status and power and rank over several other people, that smallness is then routed into telling their underlings, their minions, to go do their bidding for them against somebody else and make it a case of many against one, aka. Yep. So no, it has nothing to do with you, except that you somehow triggered a sense of envy and jealousy.
Yep.
That's not your doing. It's their shortcoming.
And I also, Dr. Gary, I also felt
prominent. It's offsetting something they're lacking.
And I also felt like they could almost smell me, to the extent that they knew that I was just going to take it and go back to my desk or my office and work harder and better in the hope that that would change the circumstance. How naive I was.
Now, you were what called, you believed in a benevolent world.
Yes, I did.
Traumatologists say is the best predictor of who will suffer trauma versus those who don't. And that it is an optimistic view. You can say it's politically naive. It's not naive, because it still reflects a belief in human nature, which is good. I don't want, you don't need to be so cynical as to not be able to function. There's no doubt about that. But you're saying all the rationalizations the targets use to beat themselves up, whereas all of our wrath needs to be set, directed against and focused on. Now get this, it's not actually the perpetrator. It's the systems, the organizations, the companies, the institutions themselves who prop them up. They not only aid and abet, they create the culture that allows this zero-sum dominion over other people, obliterative style, to function and operate. And yet that attracts, in show business, that's going to attract so many egotistical, narcissistic types, you're just more likely than some other places. It's not unique, but it's just more likely, without a doubt. But that's endemic to the industry and the types of employers. But that, you know, I'm not letting perps off the hook.
Good.
I work with perps when I'm called in. There's still humanity hidden beneath the veneer of bluster and bravado and fake courage and all the rest. But that's a very nuanced task to try and find that out.
Well, let me ask you about that, if I may. So, and you and I have talked about this previously. I never, in my experience, I certainly never saw a bully boss become a best friend, but I never even saw a bully boss become contrite. Are you telling me that that's possible to turn a bully boss around and create self-awareness and what it's doing all to stand?
Very rare.
Okay.
But I've only seen it twice.
Twice.
One of the key facets of true accountability is for perpetrators to express genuine remorse. And that just does not happen.
Does not happen,
Now, they'll do it through gritted teeth. I'm sorry. That's not genuine remorse.
No.
Oh, no, they don't get there. But the failing is the organization.
And yeah.
Our buddy, Stally Einerson, the premier academic who I did a podcast with, and as he reflected on his 32 years then, a couple of years ago now, so he's nearing 35 years experience. He predated us by a lot, and all his conclusion, even though he searched for the personality attributes of targets, even though he's looked at dynamics of perpetrators and targets, he still came down to it's the organization stupid.
Well, yes. And
the company. Yeah.
Yeah. And in my experience, again, mostly in television, video production media, it was either allowed because it was the top person, usually a man, it was the CEO, and or it was the number two who people were afraid of because of his closeness.
Yeah. His closeness, proximity to the number one.
Right. And so we're, you know, you just didn't have leverage. And I'm curious, I know how you feel about this, but I think it's important for the purposes of this conversation. It never even occurred to me to go to HR, if there was even an HR department. But in my case, the guy that was the guy writing the checks, you know, no HR person is going to go and tell the boss, the CEO of the company, stop the way you're managing. So what's your sense of all of HR departments and what those of us who are being bullied can do?
How do I back up the claim that HR is feckless? I go back to the thousands of cases we listen to. And also, I neglected to say I do expert witness work, and I'm approaching 100 legal cases where pretty much HR is deeply enmeshed in the cover-up and the encouragement of and the denial of managerial abuse. So yeah, HR. Now here's a sympathetic thing about HR. Nobody gives them the authority to do any of that stuff.
Right.
There's a reason they're in the basements of corporations. They deserve to be locked into those basements, but they don't sit at the hand of power, the seat of power.
No.
Even if you're on the executive team, they're always put in their place saying, just keep the payroll flowing, keep us out of court, whatever you got to do, just do the paperwork and shut up. And so I love that there's this software app that's always advertised for $99 a month. You can replace your HR department with $99. HR doesn't have value to an organization, but in their defense, they are not perceived as a partner on the executive team, so nobody listens to them.
No.
But somebody's got to listen to them soon, Andy. The Gen Z generations are coming.
Yeah.
In the workforce now, what am I saying? They have been thoroughly groomed their entire childhood into young adulthood on an intolerance of bullying like no other generation.
Yeah.
They're coming and they're walking away and they're telling employers, you will not treat me that way. I'm out of here. There will be no workforce within 20 years if employers don't clean up their act. Now, I won't be here in 20 years, but I'm here to tell you that's my most optimistic hope is that generation's going to smack them in the face.
Yeah.
And maybe HR could say, we better listen to these kids because they're not the old geezers. The boomers are died off. They're died off. Most are retired. And, we're the ones that took it the most. I'm speaking for my generation.
Yeah.
But you took it. You took your load. All subsequent generations adopted the creed. Lay low. Keep your head down. Don't stick out like a sore thumb. Don't draw attention to yourself lest you get your head knocked off.
Yeah.
Lack of courage. That turning inward is basically saying to ourselves, we don't deserve the dignity that we really feel like we should have.
Yeah. And that's a point I wanted to make about this. In my case, I was an executive producer in television, vice president of original programming, executive editor type. But I've attended seminars with you, Workplace Bullying University, and there were people of all races, creeds, kinds, socioeconomic circumstances, union members. I remember one particular union member who burst out into tears. This is not about me as a privileged white person. Fine, I'm happy to acknowledge my privilege. It has very little to do with the amount of money I was making, and I was nicely paid for much of my career. this is about humanity, about people treating each other in a proper fashion. And so I know that you've counseled people, executives, and people that were blue collar workers, whatever, in education, healthcare, nonprofit. It's anybody can be bullied, right? It's not just the vulnerable.
We do a lot with unions. It is It is perhaps the number one complaint that union reps and stewards, the ones who are there to advocate for the rank and file member, it's the number one thing they hear about. But it probably wouldn't surprise you to know that a lot of unions don't give a damn, because their leaders, having been groomed on, having risen the ranks by being fighters and adversarial, think that bullying is their way of life and justifies their success. Explain it anyway, that they don't want to address it. And that breaks my heart. But yes, it happens everywhere to everyone. Because we know from our national surveys, about a third of it comes from coworkers. And that also breaks my heart. As a social psychologist, the theoretical underpinning for why workers don't do anything is well documented. But just because we intellectually know that, it doesn't morally justify why are we not our brother's keeper? Why do we sit by and vicariously, indirectly, experience this when we watch it, a colleague get pummeled? Why don't we fly right into action and say, you can't do that to her. You do that to her, you do it to us all. Stop. Yeah. We don't. We're cowards. We remain silent.
Yeah.
And just emboldens the perpetrators or the clique that's coming after you.
Yeah. And I think, I think it's almost like the playground bullying where the people kind of gather around. And I think it's this notion of, thank goodness it's not me, you know?
Yes.
And so they're kind of enjoying it vicariously, mainly because the bully's focused on someone else, and for the moment anyway, and not me. So let me ask you this.
Let me
go
embellish
ahead, please,
on an answer that I didn't give adequately before, and that is, that has it changed. Here's one aspect that's changed. You just reminded me of it. Those coworkers pull out their cell phones. They'd rather video record this crap than intervene. Yeah. That stuns me. Anyway,
that's
society. Anyway.
Yeah. Yeah. And so in the few minutes we have remaining, I'm curious, given your experience pre-pandemic, pandemic, and post-pandemic, how has it changed? I thought, and I think I was wrong again, that a remote work and the amount of remote work and meetings that we've had might diminish incivility, but I'm not sure that that's been your experience in talking to people who are bully targets.
No, but Karis, it's actually worse, higher prevalence in the Zoomified remote viewing world. In the group meetings too, not in the private chats or the private rooms. Part of the pain that can be inflicted, part of the severity is dependent upon how many witnesses there are to it. The show part of the show aspect of the bullying. So they do it in the group rooms. And yes, you still get humiliated, threatened in front of others on the Zoom world. So the technology has not stopped it. The distancing, clearly it's harder when you can't say negative things face to face. We know from the science that disembodied type of aggression is actually more likely. So it's supposed to be harder when it's face to face, in person.
Yeah,
we know bullies are not intimidated by that. They're not back down. They don't mitigate the bullying. So long story short, they seem to show the perpetrators and their minions, their clique, that turn bullying into mobbing, are the kinds of people who are shameless. And they do it across all domains, all spheres, in front of people, and almost to the point they're proud of crushing other soul. And that is, that's a bad statement on human nature, isn't it?
Yeah, my feeling was that the bully boss I had either kind of enjoyed it, actually, Or they went on to bully somebody else and completely forgot. And there I am. I can't, you know, digest food. I have high anxiety, hypervigilance. And I had suicidal ideation for years and years. I was never going to act on it. I want to be clear on that. But it's either forgotten by them in the moment and you, it stays with you forever. Or I think they got enjoyment out of it. So on a more personal note, Dr. Geary, I want you to know this. In putting this summit together, I've started to interview quite a good number of leaders in the movement across the world. And over again, the people I'm talking to credit you and your work and Ruth for inspiring them to devote their careers to this issue. I'm talking about people who were in medicine, who were doctors before they did this, who were in IT, who were in corporate America. And they, as I did, you know, found you, found this work, and decided to make this their life's work. And so I know you're continuing the fight. You're not going anywhere, thankfully. But I want you to know how much I appreciate it. But it must be very gratifying to have started this movement in the U.S., to continue the movement, and now have so many other people who are lending their voice based on your early work. And in my position, in your empathy and your understanding and your thoughtfulness and how much you've learned. So I want to thank you. But how does it feel? Because all over the world, there are people that are your acolytes who are continuing this work because of what you and Dr. Ruth have done.
It's kind of embarrassing. We've had, we've had financial hardships because of the work and the choices we've made. But I always told Ruth, I said, and she, over the years, had to pull away because of the re-traumatization.
Yeah.
But I would get that kind of feedback you're talking about. That is the most gratifying.
I hope so.
I don't think I can quote the Mark Twain stuff that Holbrook put in his act, Mark Twain Tonight, but I always thought, those are the kindest words that have ever vouchsafed any wandering alien on this planet, I think.
Yeah. Well, you deserve.
It was from one of his skits. So it feeds the soul, and I've had that opportunity. Our little book, Bully at Work for Targets, has been credited with saving people's lives, I'll tell you. And I don't even remember what was in it, but I do know that Ruth and I have to write its replacement now.
Yep.
We pulled it out of print. We want to write our last book on targets, reflecting what we know now after this nearly three decades. But thank you for those kind words, both from you personally and channeling the words of others. We don't hear them, but it sure feels good.
Well, it needs to be said. And I want to thank you for all you've done for me, just me. In changing my life, I thought I was a failure. I thought my career was a failure. And I'm still working through some of these things, but I don't feel that anymore.
Nah, far from it. You know how many targets have told us over the years, I'm going to write a book. You're going to write a book.
I wrote a book.
And it's going to come out. You wrote a book.
It's coming out in 2025.
Good on you.
Dr. Geary is quoted liberally in the book. It's about my experience in workplace bullying. In television, but it also quotes Dr. Geary and many other.
That's an entertaining
experts.
Read. You write.
Thank you.
Well,
thank you for saying so. It'll come out in 2025. Yeah. And so thank you for what you've done for me and all the people who have suffered, the thousands who have suffered because of an uncaring and mean-spirited boss. For people that want to contact you, I know you're not just taking phone calls, but what's the best way to reach out to you to learn more, to understand more, perhaps to get involved, or to take advantage of your expertise?
Well, the website for the Workplace Bullying Institute is workplacebullying.org. And we have a lot of resources there. 99% of them are free. We have a big YouTube channel and all that. Just go click Help for Bullied People, and you'll see what we've tried to put out for people so they can learn on a 24/7 basis. There's a contact form there.
Right.
But like I said, we'll have another book. There's just, we've just put it there so you can passively go and study. Once you know that it's not you who have caused the problem, you will look at this phenomenon totally differently. The guilt the guilt is over not having done more. You couldn't have.
Yes.
Of course, surprise. But personal shame, where they're trying, a stranger is trying to instill a sense of worthlessness in you, that must be rejected. And everything we do is to discourage a sense of worthlessness. You do have worth. Reclaim your dignity, just like you have, Andy. And that's the message we want everybody to get. Stop giving these weak people power over us. They don't deserve it. They're no good.
Correct. Dr. Namy, you're the best. Final word from me. We call ourselves bully targets, but now let's aim to change the workplace for good. Thank you for watching. Thank you, Dr. Namy.
Thank you, Andy.